When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Tribe of Two, the officially unofficial podcast for all of Star Wars. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're back to talk about Ahsoka, Season 1, Episode 6, Part 6, Far, Far Away. Aaron, what'd you think of the introduction of Thrawn?
It didn't blow me away like the previous two chapters, but that's the big thing to talk about. The introduction of Grand Admiral Thrawn. And I guess Darth Swanson is the other. That's the thing that I just like. I got really sad knowing that we're only going to get one season out of this guy. He's just so fucking good. And I'm just really curious to see what his plan is. Like, what his perfect society, what is he trying to engineer? He's just so fascinating. And we got a little bit more of his backstory because his student is just as eager as us to know about him. And it's just like, man, it's preemptively sad that this is going to be it for old Lord Ron here. I think that Grand Admiral Thrawn's introduction was perfect. It was really cool. I love this, like, exiled, degenerate, like, hobbled together Imperial remnant that's got that Kitsugi. Is that how you pronounce the Japanese practice of stitching pottery, broken pottery together with gold? Seams to get that effect. And how he's like, you know, his prim and proper Grand Admiral, but his uniform's not as pristine as it should be. There's a stain here or there. And he's just like, he's a perfect envision of what I would think he looked like from the books. And he's the way he gets up that head of steam about wanting Ahsoka's complete history and her master and her homeworld and her culture. And it's like, that's like, yeah, this is exactly what I'm from Thrawn. However, the second he walked on the scene, I'm like, Jesus Christ, that's just a blue Elon Musk. And there's two thoughts I have with him. It's like, this is the perfect fucking Grand Admiral Thrawn. And also, he looks like he looks like Elon Musk that's flunked out of the chocolate factory, like he would. So those are my thoughts. And then I guess like that's the other thing is like, how you think they handled the Sabine Ezra reunion for someone who hasn't watched Rebels or Clone Wars. I think it worked for me, especially since they really set this up for a horrible dilemma of her getting exactly what she wants. But I think it's clear that it's not going to be anything like what Ezra wants. And it's going to be perfect, you know, Faustian bargain she's made with these devilish figures. I said, it's not as thrilling as the previous, but it's also, they know they got Thrawn to ooh and ah over. What'd you think?
Yeah, I bet for people who were really, really jonesing to see Thrawn, this probably was a pretty thrilling episode, because that introduction... the introduction of Thrawn had me in cold sweats. I was shivering. I couldn't really sit up. My body was aching. I think it was Thrawn, right? I also got the COVID vaccine yesterday, so maybe it was that. I don't know. But yeah, it was pretty effective, I thought, regardless of what my body was doing. I think that was cool. I am curious to see what Baylan's ultimate goal is here. He's talking in a macro scale on history, in the historical context, that I think is super interesting, because I want to talk about like what I think his end goal is going to be later in the episode, but that part has me maybe the most intrigued. Like, I know Admiral Thrawn, what he wants the galactic domination, right? Like, it's pretty easy to figure him out. But this Baylan guy wants something else, I think. So to me, that's the most interesting part of this. I don't know Ezra from a brick wall, so like the introduction of Ezra did basically nothing for me. Although looking online, this was a huge moment for everybody who's seen any of the Rebel stuff.
Of course.
Yeah. So good for them. I'm glad they got that. For me, it was like, okay, you know, Ezra, he's a dude who is a little flip, a little flippant, whatever. And he's in for probably a rude awakening with the compromises Sabine has made to find him.
Yeah. So that's the thing that's really appealing to me. And, you know, as far as Ezra himself, I think he looks cool. He looks like a young, sure, hip, force-using Star Wars dude, and that's probably what he is. So, because they're setting up for it. I mean, this guy, like, my understanding is he sacrificed essentially himself to take Thrawn off the fucking board.
Mm-hmm.
And the horror that he must feel to have that big of a sacrifice and to pay that high a price and to have someone, for what I would think even he would consider selfish reasons, come and undo all that work.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can all be stranded with the hermit crab. I'm really curious to see how they play that off, because that's something that, I mean, Sabine is to set up these multilateral betrayals of the people who are close to us. And like, that character should pay a price for that, you know?
Yeah,
but
for sure.
I don't know. I also feel like Filoni is hedging and not there's that kind of like hinting that she's not going to pay that high, with Hu Yang kind of like, well, you know,
yeah, there would be an argument, but it won't result in any loss for her, right?
Yeah,
she'll get everything she wants, pretty sure.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to pull like on the Marvel side where like the Scarlet Witch just turns into a big bad guy because of entirely understandable human reasons, but they're just also profoundly selfish and short-sighted. And you know what, regardless how you feel about, I guess, that Scarlet Witch plot line, that was a huge shift for that universe and for that character. And I don't know, maybe Filoni really knows what he's doing. He's going to turn Sabine into an Anakin type Skywalker that has to be redeemed.
Yeah,
but
maybe she'll get Ahsoka killed. This whole event will get Ahsoka killed, and Ahsoka season 2 will just be Sabine and Ezra, and it will truly be Rebels season 6. just like Book of Boba Fett, you know, is Mandalorian season 2.5.
It would be curious to see if Filoni would ever kill like one, because it seems like that Ahsoka is his A number one canon baby.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got Ezra, Sabine, like, I guess Hera, those are all like, does he have an in to kill any one of those? But that, you know, to be fair, like, I never once watching the original trilogy thought that like Luke, Han, or Leia would actually die.
For sure.
So, yeah. You know, it's fine to have a little bit of plot armor there.
Mm-hmm. So that's what I thought. Maybe we should get into the recap.
Let's do it. We're not interested in Jedi protocol. We'll be right back.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of bald movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
It's time for your training, Padawan. Here's more Tribe of Two.
Start off with Ahsoka and Hui Yang waiting as the Purgles fly them through hyperspace. To pass the time, they chat about the stories that Hui Yang used to tell her, Histories of the Galaxy, Parts 1, 2, and 3. Ahsoka admits she didn't tell Hera that Sabine made the choice to go with Baylan willingly. That troubles Hui Yang, and he suggests maybe it wasn't a choice at all. She
what do you
was
think
just
going to
do
that?
What she was going to do. That's what I mean. Like,
there,
she,
like even,
even she could not make the choice to leave Ezra there.
Even Ahsoka is dipping its callous toe into the determinism waters, really. You know, Sabine had no fucking choice but to throw the whole galaxy into back in a civil war because she just really missed her friend. She had no agency. She was compelled by fate and forced the yeah, I don't know. I don't. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
I mean, look, Star Wars has the whole Destiny thing built into it, right? I mean,
but it's constantly subverted. All the people saying it's your destiny. Sure. Get their asses wrecked. Because no, actually,
there's an opposing destiny on the other side, which does actually come true, right? Anakin does bring balance to the Force, that kind of thing. So,
from a certain point of view, sure.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, so maybe they're going with that, or maybe they're just going with Sabine literally couldn't. She doesn't have it in her to make the choice to leave Ezra. If Ezra is out there, she, no matter what the price, she is going to choose to try and save him. So from that aspect, it's not a choice.
The other observation Hui Yang makes is that maybe she made the choice for herself and that is your true fear. What does that mean? Can you translate that and from
she
spooky
made the
robot
for
to
herself?
And that's what Ahsoka fears? Is this just
that Ahsoka is trying to teach her things and she's not listening? I don't know, because that is definitely a fear of Ahsoka.
Or is it just that she's like, you know, selfishness is one of those, you know, Yoda things. It's a path that leads to the dark side.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe it's an altruistic decision to sacrifice. I find it very hard to get into the mind of Sabine. I'm very much more of Ahsoka, where it's like,
there's a greater good here.
And then like, and it's one, it's just the stakes are so fucking high. It's like literally bringing back an effective non Adderall addicted Hitler, you know, back into the world to unleash care. Just because like the guy, the freedom fighter who put him away in the first place, you miss him so much. It's, and as I said, it's like, to me, if this series follows through, like Sabine has to pay for that in some way. Yeah. I don't even think you can pay for that with your life. Like that's just trillions of beings suffering and being enslaved potentially. It's high stakes stuff.
I was curious what their version of a different galaxy was going to look like. If it was going to be, you know, gravity doesn't work the same here, or the laws of the universe are different in another. No, it's just different place, same shit. Which I was relieved to see.
kind. Yeah. I didn't want the, you know, like Star Trek does that too. It's like, oh, we're on the edge of the galaxy. Does physics even work out here? It's like, yes, fucking does. Come on.
Yeah, these are universal laws for a reason. Another question I had is, yeah. I haven't really thought about it until now. Is a droid really the best person to be teaching younglings about the Force? A droid that cannot feel the Force itself? Wouldn't you want a Jedi, someone who has a special, like, close relationship with the Force, teaching them these things?
Well, you know,
everything
he's
saying about the Force rings hollow here. It's like, I read in a book once that the Force, you know, surrounds and binds all things. Like, dude, Obi-Wan knew this shit intuitively because he felt it.
Right, it's like going to get dating advice from a Catholic priest. It's like, well, in theory, if I look in the Song of Solomon here, it sounds like you have to compare their rear ends to a charming mountain goat. Try that, my son, and go. Right. You will sin no more if you follow my father Riz here is giving the advice. Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. Like, well, how the fuck would this robot? But on the other hand, like, they say if you can't do, then teach. So it's like, why waste a Force user with these snot-nosed punks when they're just going to be mostly throwing up on each other and bashing each other's heads on a lightsaber? Save Master Yoda for when they quit all that, I guess. Although, they did make it canon that Master Yoda loves to get in with the pants pissers and...
Uh-huh. Read them stories, tell them
stories. The real goo goo gaga crowd there. I want to make two observations of my own. I think it's interesting that two science fiction series in as many weeks have done riffs of Star Wars titles. One was this Foundation, which it was long ago, not far away, and now you've got Far, Far Away.
It's almost like Star Wars is a cultural touchstone for multiple generations of people. It's almost like that.
How much willpower did Filoni use to not call this or did not have Huang say a long, long time ago in a galaxy far away? Because that'd be a nice subversion, right?
Sure, he loves to subvert. He loves to cut those off, just truncate them, but like, here he goes all in on it, right? I mean, I guess he didn't run down the full crawl, but that's the full line. Long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Do you have any guesses of what story Hu Yang actually told her that it set place a long, long time ago? A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
It's got to be like a Dathomir folktale, right?
I thought it'd be funny if it's just literally Star Trek 4.
Okay, sure.
This long, this faraway galaxy, the Milky Way. Speaking of space whales, let me tell you about a time a space whale probe visited the planet Earth. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's how we have Transparasteel or something.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's how we got transparent. Yeah.
Because of Scotty.
Those were the ancestors of the hyperspace whales that you see today.
Mm-hmm.
They took a ride in a Klingon hold, and they just got a taste for it. Got a taste for it.
Love it. Well, did you have another observation, or was that both?
No, I think that's plenty. I think that's plenty.
All right, let's go over to Sabine. She's on the Eye of Sion. She's shackled in a cell. Not too happy about it. And Baylan comes up and she reminds him that we had a deal. He doesn't seem too concerned with honoring it at the moment.
Yeah, she's getting the firsthand lesson on what that whole lawful evil thing looks like. She's going to be dealing with a lot of lawful evil in her future because that seems like what, I don't know, maybe he's lawful neutral.
Perhaps.
But Thrawn, certainly lawful evil.
Mm-hmm. And then Baylan goes to see Morgan to say that Sabine can still be used to them. They exit hyperspace around Peridia, the home of the Dathomiri, and a Star Whale graveyard, apparently. Purgle graveyard. They pick up a beacon on the surface, and Shin fetches Sabine. They head down to the planet. This is crazy looking.
Yeah, I actually really like this world building. I love the idea they kind of are combining, you know, the Lion King elephant graveyard with the space whale migration, and the detail that this entire ring around this planet is like every hyperspace whale, every Pergil patriarch and matriarch. I think that's a really fucking cool idea.
Here's the weird thing to me, and maybe I was wrong about things working the same in this galaxy, but wouldn't this space whales just be space whales, not skeletons?
Well, I mean, they were designed to live in the deeps of space, so obviously the bacteria and the tube worms and everything else that would eat them when they're dead would also thrive in a space type of environment. So it's just a whole complex ecosystem in this orbiting whale fall that they've got going on here.
What is the ecosystem? That's what I want to know. Like, what do they eat in space? I mean, that's probably explainable, but like, what's the point? I mean, the point here on Earth,
you're going
of bacteria
to have some...
eating your materials after you die is to deposit those materials back into the ecosystem. I don't know what the ecosystem in space is.
Every time you say that, you cause a earnest 32-year-old software engineer to write me a Wikipedia article talking about what Pergils eat and crap and all that kind of stuff. So if, unless you really want to know... Don't make them do all that unpaid labor.
All right. My bad. Don't worry about it. It's cool, though. It's very cool looking.
It is very cool. It's very cool in the world building, and like that this is like that they have this great migration where they visit all these galaxies, and this is like the end point where, you know, that like anyone who's too old to make it, they just kind of swim out there. Maybe there's an episode of Rebels that deals with the funerary customs of these Pergil, but.
And it gives you the perfect excuse for Ahsoka showing up, right? Like, this is just their natural route, and they're going to end up here. Just happens to be this Dathomir planet.
And if you go with the idea that, like, they were inspired by to use hyperspace by observing the whales, I mean, that's like, you know, it's not untrue that a lot of mankind's attempts to fly were based on copying things in nature, right? I can get that. And like that you're essentially following kind of game trails through unexplored territory in a very, you know, Lewis and Clark kind of, you know, you're just following these twisty little whale migration places to get to. I like it. What do you think of like, so this is like a big hyperspace jump, and you can tell because they have fire and lightning and all kinds of shit coming off of the thing when it exits it. Did you need that? Because I feel like, why would a big hyperspace, why would you suddenly turn into Marty McFly exiting the DeLorean in the 1952 just because you jumped a 100,000 light years instead of 10,000 light years?
I don't know.
Maybe a million light years. Maybe it's a lot bigger difference than I'm thinking. I don't know. I just thought that was really funny.
Huge number of light years, but sure, I could see it. They then land at this temple, religious site. I don't know what it is, where some witches are doing laser tricks, and they welcome Morgan as one of them. Thrawn is apparently
Pink Floyd concert.
Apparently, Thrawn's on his way, but he's not here yet. And the witches claim that Sabine is dangerous because she's got the Jedi stink on her. So they send her into another cell.
These witches of Dathomir, I don't know if you're old enough to get this reference, and certainly no one outside the central Indiana area will, but the design of these witches looks exactly like famed late night TV horror host Sammy Terry. The color of the robes, the exact like face paint on the skin. It's just he looks like a warlock of Dathomir. And I laughed out loud when I first saw them. No fault of their own, but local legend Sammy Terry. I thought it was also cool that like this is recognizably the same, like the ruins of Dathomir on the other side of the other galaxy, except for this is made like all the rock is polished black marble with like gold filigree. It's almost certainly the exact same set that they then weathered and distressed to do the other filming. Sure.
No, it feels like they're portals, right? Like you could get from one to the other almost.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. Pretty cool concept. Very Stargate-y, right? Like, you know, especially with Grand Admiral pulling up in his Star Destroyer and parking right on the top of it, just like Raw with his spaceship. But it was a cool scene. I liked it.
I was a little dismayed by this quote unquote cell that they put Sabine in. Like,
yeah,
okay, if you want to throw maybe Pedro Pascal, like the Mandalorian, into this cell, that might hold him, but Sabine can crawl right out that window. That window is enormous compared to her body.
Maybe it's like a sky cell, or anytime, because I started like trying to figure out, because yeah, anytime you're holding a force user, it's problematic, right? But I'm like, well, it's a Witches of Dathomir. They know Jedi. They hate Jedi. They probably have special anti-Jedi security, so maybe it's like a sky cell situation.
Sabine only has two midichlorians, so
true.
A force user, she is not.
Just enough to rub them together and get some force heat, baby. It's what I'm telling you.
But she's also got a slim body. She can get right out that window.
True, true.
Smaller windows on jail cells. That's my recommendation for Star Wars.
They keep on cutting to Darth Swanson, like, going at them, like, you know, mistreating his prisoner or whatnot. But, like, I don't know that actually tracks, you know? Because, like, how dare you betray this person nakedly instead of dastardly and behind her back like me,
instead of from a certain point of view, right?
Yeah. And he's like smirking it up when she's complaining about her mistreatment, but then there it's like, I don't know, maybe there is just like a genuine animosity, like he hates these Dathomiri witches as much as they hate him.
Yeah, so he's super curious to talk about that. This next scene is where I kind of want to talk about the bulk of his goals, so let's get into that. Balin's feeling uneasy because of the folktale stories he's heard about this place, and Shin says, sometimes stories are just stories. And then he tells her the story of how empires always rise and fall, and how he wants to find, according to him, the beginning to finally bring the cycle to an end. And here is like the most interesting thing in the episode to me, because it gives some veiled context to what he's actually trying to do. She suggests like, maybe it's our time to wield power, right? If this is cyclical, let's do this. We're ready. And he's like, you sweet summer child, I'm not trying to wield power. I think what he's trying to do is end the cycle.
I'll
break the wheel.
Yeah, I'll match your Game of Thrones reference with one of my own. He's trying to do a Queen Dany thing.
Totally. At least in my opinion, that's what he's doing. And in my idea of doing that, and the context around which he's talking about this is like the Jedi Temple, the Jedi falling, the Empire rising. It's kind of around the Force aspect of it a little bit. And in my opinion, I think he might be trying to attack the Force itself. Like, if the Force is causing all these rise and falls, then let's just eliminate the Force, and that will end the cycle.
I think so I have three primary theories. One is, yes, he is trying to do something that destroys the Force, that just destroys the Force as a force, in the galaxy. I wish I could reach out and tell him that, like, hey, dude, we don't have the Force in our galaxy, and we shit things up so bad. You're looking
Same
to blame
cycles.
The Force, just like people blame religion. No, it's all here. It's all here. It's all the shit between our ears that's causing this. But so that's one thing. The thing is, I don't like about that theory is, like, I don't think it's any kind of canon Star Wars that the Force traditions or the Force started the Witches of Dathomir in some other galaxy. Like, Filoni, that might be a bridge too far for me.
Maybe he's looking for something that can end it. He's not necessarily going to the place
like
where
maybe a super weapon that they built to kill, like a final kind of solution. To borrow the words of Adolf Hitler for the Jedi, and they like, but obviously they're not using it. It's like a doomsday weapon, and he's going to throw the trick. That's that'd be interesting.
It could just be a stepping stone with the Dathomiri, right? It's not, maybe they didn't start there, but he can use them as a jumping off point to find where it did start.
The second possibility, and this is, I don't know why, but it's like, you know, I'm using the same kind of context clues. There's a lot of the idea the hyperspace travel started here, you know,
Oh.
Like, is there something he could do to destroy hyperspace lanes? So, like, the whole galaxy is cut off, and like, does he see, like, it's the galaxy-spanning part of the problem. I don't think that's the case, but I think it's an interesting... the final thing, the thing I think is the most likely, is I think he wants to create essentially a Jedi kingdom, just like the Witches of Dathomir had on this, but he wants a planet where it's just force people that he can shape into like a good, a light sides bastion that's free from all the compromises that the Jedi had to do because they were the babysitters over a squabbling fractious galaxy. He wants to start over with a new galaxy, a clean galaxy, one that's separate, that can be left to be like this perfect utopian society. That's what I think is the most likely, especially since he's talking about like admiring the fact that this is the kingdom of the witches and look at what they built and what once was and what might be again. So which of those do you like any of those? Obviously, you like the first theory. It's yours.
Yeah, I'm really on the one where he's trying to actually destroy the force itself. But I don't know. It could be. I'm curious to see.
Let me ask you this.
What this galaxy's like, though, because they're like we've explored one planet in a galaxy and only a single site on that planet, right?
Right.
What is out there in this galaxy, like that might prevent him from achieving his goals? He has no context here, so I'd like to see what he comes up against here.
The other thing I don't like about Destruction of the Force is he talks about training Darth Grimes to be something more than a Jedi, which I don't know if that jibes with like the Force being destroyed.
Yeah, his opinion of the Jedi is that he likes their ideas, but they're weak, and they didn't fail for it.
They didn't go far enough, and I guess the protection of whatever purity or strength they're. Moral authority they had, because I don't think he's like ha 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 I want to be evil. I think he bemoans the fact that the Jedi fell and caused all this, and he's looking for a way to like get the old Republic going in like a permanent golden age where you never have any more falls, no more battle between light and dark. But I don't know, because like the other old Star Wars belief is like that's impossible. Like,
yeah,
the best you can ever hope for is that there to be balance. You're never going to take all the good or all the bad and make them ascendant. So,
yeah, and he could just
might be a fool's errand.
Yeah, he could just be a fool. You know,
Idealistic, damned fool, idealistic crusader.
Mm-hmm. Potentially. So I don't know. That part really intrigued me. Let's go back over to Sabine sitting in her cell, trying to contact Ahsoka through the Force. She gives up and instead tries forcing the door open. Just then a Star Destroyer shows up and docks with the site. With as much pomp and circumstance as you can imagine, Thrawn reveals himself to them. Apparently, it's going to take 3 days to load the cargo. The witches tell him that Morgan brought a prisoner, Sabine, and he says she'll be of great use. Ooh, this is another big moment in the episode.
Yeah, this is the moment. Like him pulling up the Star Destroyer, we talked about like everybody called this out as a reference. This Kintsugi like way to both repair and beautify something like the Star Destroyer. You can tell like that was ripped apart by space whales, and now it's been stitched together with some gold type material. The Stormtrooper's armor is being held with the Honor Guard with gold, but the others by these crimson lines where it's been fractured and. It's just, and then, like I said, this is, other than the unfortunate Musk resemblance, I think this is exactly the kind of Grand Admiral Thrawn. He's soft-spoken, he's courteous, polite, proper, but there's also, like, a ruthlessness to him that you see towards the end of the episode. And also, just, like, you get the idea that it's very hard to take him by surprise. Because he's not going to tell himself unpleasant fictions and flatter himself and buy into his own ego. In fact, it's like early on in the Heir to the Empire, there's like this great scene where, everyone's waiting for Thrawn to kill like in a very, bad Imperial way, like some underling that's failed him. And he makes the point, it's like, why why would I ever do that? This person made a mistake and he's learned from me. He's a better person. Like, it'd be ridiculous to kill this person. Then he turns to his supervisor and kills him because he should have trained him better. And this guy committed a sin out of ignorance. The other guy knowingly fucked up his job. So it's like, I don't know. I always thought Thrawn is great. And in just like the 5 or 10 minutes we get of him in this episode, it feels like the Skarsgård brother here is going to nail him.
Yeah. Seems like it. Honestly, it's not what I expected Thrawn to look like, aside from the blue skin, red eyes.
What were you thinking?
I expected Thrawn to have a more of a physical presence to him, like a jawline at least. Let's get a man with a jawline. He's very like contoured in a weird way, you know? he does not look as threatening as I imagined he would.
I thought the uniform does a lot of work. I thought he looks good. That's like an exceptionally well-cut uniform. And he doesn't look physically imposing, but that's not his deal. He looks formidable, but like in a button-down, calculating kind of way.
Yeah, in an intellectual way. And that could definitely work. It's just, you know, on first sight, I was surprised. But I do like that you mentioned his uniform. It's a little threadbare in some spots, because he's been out here for a while. Just it's still bright white. You can tell that he has not let down his guard as far as protecting his uniform, and you know, he's doing the best he can with it. And then there's this Enoch character who is like, I guess, the leader of his troops here, wearing this mask with the golden face, evoking, you know, like Roman, ancient Roman era parade helmets, I guess. I don't know exactly what these are for, but they were more ceremonial than they were for actual battle.
It is kind of like very Roman, Greco-Roman, but it's also very
Japanese as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say East. It's very East Asian, or I guess, is that West Asian?
This particular face looks very Roman in its sculpting, as opposed to the Japanese armor like this used to look more monstrous, I'd say, more intimidating, right? This is more regal and supposed to impress people, not scare people.
Yeah. It looks a lot like the gladiator from the big, you know, the guy who wears a silver mask gladiator. Kind of look. But yeah, I thought it's a neat, it's such an arresting thing to see a stormtrooper with this golden face.
Yeah.
It's instantly cool recognizable design. As like this commander centurion unit, but also visually reads as a stormtrooper. And then, yeah, I mean, like, that's the masterstroke of all this is this, like, you look at it for 30 seconds and you get this whole thing. Like, they'll later tell you about, oh, you know, we've been not resupplied for decades and it's, you know, our numbers are dwindled. It's been hard out there. But like everything about the visual design screams this exile running low on men and materials and morale. It's very cool.
And I've been trained, I guess, by, I don't know, my own brain commentary, to see Ezra in every corner and every shadow, and I'm like, oh, Enoch is Ezra, you know. Of course it's not.
It's funny because I wonder if I'd have come under that theory if they hadn't shown his face at the end. That's why, you know, you'd have to, right?
Right.
There's a couple things as far as the plot here. Any ideas of what cargo they're transferring from the crypts and catacombs of the Great Mothers into Admiral Thrawn's Star Destroyer? We later see that they're coffin shaped, like cryopod looking.
Yeah, I guess nothing that isn't inspired by potentially out-of-date spoilers.
Yeah. Do we want to talk about the heir to the Empire tie? Because I kind of would like to, not maybe now, but maybe in between now and feedback, to talk about like what this might be.
Sure, because I'm curious about it. I don't recall the details of this stuff, but I definitely have an idea as to what those might be.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would like to discuss it maybe here at the end.
Okay, we'll set up for that.
Cool.
Also, what did you think about Thrawn's knowing look at Darth Swanson saying that you're not the first to part with the Jedi?
Is this in like the next half of the scene where Sabine is there, or this?
Uh-uh.
Okay. I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah, I don't either. I just like, I wonder if this is some, because I never know if this is something teasing to come or this is a knowing like nod to Rebels. Like a lot of times I get that. It's like, well, I know I'm supposed to pick it, but I'm not sure this is a wink to Rebels fans or this is like foreshadowing for something to come. Or, as it frequently is, sometimes both.
Yeah, totally.
But I noticed it.
All right, let's bring Sabine into the scene here. She's brought before Thrawn. He says he intends to honor Baylan's deal with her, then releases her, gives her supplies to go find Ezra. But she needs to get back before 3 days, otherwise she'll be stranded there. There's a little, you know, back and forth between them, a little jabbing with words.
It just seems so ineffective, because, like, granted how Thrawn is, it reminded me of like when you're trying to insult someone that's just like too stupid to get it. You know, like he's like, you threw away the entire galaxy on a selfish thing. She's like, yeah, something you could never understand. And he's just like, yeah, no, I don't. Like, I would never, ever, ever do what you just did. I would never, ever, ever hand my mortal enemies a decisive win for some purely personal concern. And I will never, you're right, Sabine, I will never understand what makes you tick. And Herb, like, I gotcha. Like, no, I don't think so. I don't think
well,
so. I don't
just,
think you were.
They value different things, you know?
Yeah, trillions
have
of
very different
power over
the
trillions of people's lives versus, oh man, when I think about this guy and him not being here, it's sad. And also, in the span of a human lifetime, he's going to die eventually. So I've mortgaged myself a few years of potential bliss with him in a galaxy in flames for said galaxy in flames. If Sabine is not treated as one of the greatest traitors and monsters in the galaxy, she could be redeemed. Fucking Anakin was. But that's the level of betrayal we're talking about. Like, stomping up to the Jedi Order, murdering younglings, et cetera, et cetera. This is bad stuff.
Yeah, I'm with you. I certainly agree. But from her perspective, she did get him, you know? Like, you know, you have no personal connections to anyone. That's something she values deeply. And so it is an insult to say that he would never make that choice.
I don't know. That seems a little... I mean, he seems like he's perfectly friendly with Lady Morgan and the Great Mothers. He's got a full, rich life with Enoch and his fractured stormtroopers.
Oh, yeah. Him, like, and Enoch knocking back beers.
Oh, yeah. They got...
sitting out there with the Purgles knocking back beers.
They got a Ted Lasso-style Force Wolf Club where they talk about their relationships. Dave Filoni loves it. Loves it. He really...
Yeah, him and a Howler are out there just...
100%. 100%.
Between him, you know, pressing his uniform and murdering his inferiors for mistakes.
Did you get screeners? How are you dropping these plot details from episode 8? I just...
Is this hideous... Speaking of Howlers, is this hideous beast that they give her better or worse than a direwolf in Game of Thrones? from a technical perspective.
I mean... It seems as if they were identical. Like a
same here. I thought so.
Yeah, they're just a slightly more Dr. Seussian version of a direwolf.
A little blurry around the edges, just like a Game of Thrones direwolf. Little like
You split the middle from a warg from Lord of the Rings and a direwolf in Game of Thrones, and you got a howler.
Yeah. So this next sequence, and I kind of grouped the howler stuff in here from like a separate scene, because I don't think they should have done as many cuts as they did. If I had one complaint about this episode, that's it. They cut back and forth too much, and it made the entire narrative on each side of the cuts feel a little disjointed or feel a little repetitive, I guess. Especially with the stuff around Thrawn and Morgan's concern about Sabine. It all felt like we were rehashing stuff over and over again.
And even shots like where the unleashing of Sabine and the unleashing of Darth Swanson and Grimes are kind of the same. So it's like maybe, and then you cut from that
together,
to
right?
Grand Admiral Thrawn, where he gets told exactly what we just saw. And it's like, well, you could just skip that scene. It's like, you know,
yeah,
my lord,
totally.
the mercenaries have been released. And then when Baylan shows up on her trail. Yeah, you're right. I think you're right.
It's a little disjointed because of the cuts, but, you know, that's a minor complaint, ultimately.
Yeah.
Beware the Sith. We will return. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV+, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. Are you hearing voices too? Welcome back to Tribe of Two. So let's go to the next part of the scene where Thrawn instructs Baylan and Chin to follow Sabine and destroy them both if she finds them. So we see that, you know, Thrawn is not going to honor the deal. And I don't know if that bothers Baylan, because he also seems like he's not going to honor the deal over the course of this episode. It's just he's not fine with like the callous way that he's doing this.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it seems like this is all part of Baylan's deal too. So like, I don't understand why he's doing all this. Like, this is distasteful business. Or maybe, I mean, it might genuinely be distasteful. Mm-hmm. I don't understand, because what Thrawn says to me ultimately rings true. Like, especially until they find out there's a Jedi riding in the mouth of a hyperspace capable whale at the end of the episode. But like, he makes this point several times. Like, look. Whatever happens to Bean or Rin or Grimes or Swanson, I don't give a fuck. I'm out of this galaxy in 2.5 days, and these guys can stay here and play if they want. That seems like it's unclear to me why anyone's investing the time and effort to hunt down Sabine or Ezra. It seems like it's more. And I think everyone asked that, like, people keep on saying, like, why the fuck did we bring these people? Why the fuck did you bring these people? Who are these people that you brought? And Balin's always like, oh, they're going to be useful to us. They're going to be useful to us. Like, it has to be something that suits his end. I'm having a hard time foreseeing how killing Sabine and Ezra would bring it into force, hyperspace, or help start, unless he's going to keep a bunch of young Jedi, quasi Jedi, captive for breeding purposes. This create his new perfect Jedi order. I don't understand how it all connects, but clearly it does.
Yeah, that's what I wonder is, you know, Thrawn sends Baylan and Chin to destroy them, but I don't think that's necessarily Balin's goal. I don't think he wants to destroy Ezra and
Sabine.
It's
not Thrawn's either. Thrawn,
well, he
didn't even
specifically tells him to, like, if he finds her, or if she finds Ezra, kill them both, you know. There seems like a little bit of a personal vendetta here with Thrawn.
Sure, like Thrawn would love to kill Ezra,
mm-hmm.
because he, yeah, because
but
Balin, you know,
has
but,
different plans. I think he wants to use them more than
right.
kill them.
Thrawn would not slow down or stop on the highway to run Ezra over.
Sure.
But if he's in his lane, he absolutely would. Like, he might even swerve a bit, but he's not going to stop or divert his to do it. Like, you know. So, like, yeah, that's you're right. Like, it was given as if Balin is the one who, or I'm sorry, the Thrawn is the one that wanted this all done. But like, Thrawn had no idea this side quest even existed when they showed up. So it's like, I thought it was weird because like the way he phrases, like, you may follow. Like, it's almost like, yeah, I don't. This is your plan. I'm providing you with the mounts and stuff for my materials necessary to do it. But like, it's more like he's acquiescing than ordering. But you thought mm-hmm. it felt like more of an order than
it. Than it feels like the opportunity to get Ezra presented itself, and Thrawn yeah. took it. And he's giving over two squads of his guys, right? Yeah, it's not a ton of guys, but it's certainly resources he could use to get the hell out of here faster. So there is
possibly.
Some. Element of like, I'm willing to sacrifice a little bit of speed here in order to get another thing I want, which is Ezra dead.
What evidence do you have that it's because like I got that where the part of the tension between him and Morgaine when she asked him to send more than one squads is like he is unwilling to commit anything to will sacrifice his greater objective. So like these are like,
well,
it's two squads because I can spare uh-huh. that without slowing me down.
But he can't. I mean, if he had two more squads working, it would inevitably speed him
I
up.
I guess
right?
two like, more squads of stormtroopers, yeah, can carry that many coffins full of night
exactly,
sisters
yeah.
or whatever the fuck
so
is happening here.
So he is
here,
sacrificing
yeah.
something. It's just a sacrifice he deems appropriate based
yeah.
on the goal
I'll
of killing Ezra.
Two squads of stormtroopers to kill Ezra and settle the score. Yeah.
But no more, right? Because yeah. then I would be sacrificing too much speed for my taste.
What I thought is interesting, even more than Darth Swanson, is Darth Grimes seems bothered by this. Do you think she
yeah, yeah.
sees this is the first time she sees her master as being anything more less than noble? Do you think that she finds like she
well,
really wants to beat Sabine, but she wants to do it like? And if I don't know, because like I can't really reconcile maybe her being disappointed in her master being like duplicitous.
Hmm.
Like she didn't understand her master of dragging this girl to this and letting and helping her on her quest, but like she's like, well, okay. And now that he's kind of like reneging in the spirit of it's like bothers her.
It's possible. I don't know why she would be so worried about this, because in my mind, she's a little bit jealous that Sabine has not been killed already. And that maybe he's like Balin sort of taking her under his wing in a strange way. And so she should want to kill Sabine quickly.
I'm wondering if this is what I hope is not true, but it could be. And I'd understand if it was. I wonder if some of these like reactions are from a part of the production before Rey died. And that they had to make some changes to the end to kind of like, like, so there were a little bit more threads of stuff, but they couldn't do that anymore. So they had to wrap. Because, like, or it could be that they're just like, there is going to be perfectly legitimate and understandable explanation for all this. We just haven't got to that yet. But if there is a little bit of messiness in the storyline, I'd be inclined to believe, you know, behind the scenes production problems caused by a main character dying unexpectedly. And like, oh, yeah. shit, what can we do with the stuff we've got here in the editing bay to kind of like clean this up? And so, yeah, I don't know. I'm curious to see if any of the misgivings that seems like these not Jedi have about working with the shitbags they're working with are going to bear fruit.
All right, let's go to Sabine, who's out in the wilderness. She's attacked by bandits and her howler runs off, abandons her. And she manages to defeat her attackers anyway. Okay. I said I had one problem with the episode, one minor complaint. I have two.
Oh.
And this becomes a major complaint at some point. Random jabronis in another galaxy have cobbled together, they're bandits, they're cobbled together armor, cobbled together weaponry, able to block a lightsaber. Did we just happen to stumble onto a planet with a bunch of Beskar?
Wait, when did they block? Because I just saw her cutting through their shit, their armor, their staffs.
At the end, she cuts through a staff, but it definitely blocks a couple of blows, too.
Huh.
I was looking for this specifically because I couldn't believe what I saw.
Well, you see, Jim, the witches of Dathomir long battled the Jedi, and they have, there's a naturally occurring mineral that is on this planet, and it's super dense, and its molecular structure disrupts the plasma blade as it passes, and it's not completely proof, but it's like, you know, wearing asbestos underwear in a fire, it's just going to help you out a little bit.
Sure.
That's a Wikipedia article, probably.
It just blows my mind how depowered the coolest part of Star Wars, the lightsaber, has become. It's a joke. It's a fucking joke.
Blame all the video games, I think, because if you had a video game where you actually had a realistic Jedi Master, it just like it would be some kind of insane psychopath simulator. Hey, we talked about Rebel scanners. With Hera. You can tell this ain't no Rebel scanner. Because if it was a Rebel scanner, it would be three times bigger. Its battery would half last as long. And it would have survived being cut in half. You duct tape that shit back together and it will fucking scan. This is Imperial tech.
Yeah. It's small but delicate. It's not massive and rugged.
I actually, because, you know, I'm a lightsaber guy, I kind of admire the fighting style of Sabine. I really like this kind of blended Mandalorian physicality, blasters and lightsaber. And her having to, like, go to the lightsaber because she was overmatched with the blasters. I know we talk about this in The Mandalorian. It is not cool when people wearing Beskar constantly take otherwise fatal hits to their Beskar armor. Like, it really is not cool, guys. Like, maybe once or twice a season it can save the day, but like I just think it's super stupid to watch these guys, like a hero, just tank all these short range blaster shots and I don't know, do the Wonder Woman bracelet deflection thing. I just wish they'd tone that down. And again, it's a problem on The Mandalorian, too.
Well, these bandits, the focusing lenses on their blasters are slightly detuned from years of hard living on this planet. You know?
Really?
Yeah, Wikipedia article number two.
Some kind of crystal, probably, that is powered by Tabana gas. And it's just like, you know, their Tabana gas a little weak.
Yeah, your Tabana gas cylinder gets low on your blaster and, you know, you got to swap it out, but you can't do it mid-fight.
I actually saw that Wikipedia article. I think it had a Legends tag, but what can you do?
Yeah. Okay, let's move over to Baylan and Shanigan. They right after Sabine. And then Morgan wants to send everything Thrawn's got after Sabine and possibly Ezra if they find him. But Thrawn only sends two squads because they need the rest to load the cargo. And, you know, we talked about how the editing makes us a little weird, but I understand his concern here. You know, he wants to get out of here as fast as possible, but there's a hint of the personal in here too.
Well, like, I'm talking about this fucker
who stranded me here.
With the hint of the personal, what about Lady Morgan here? Do you think she cares one way or another?
About getting Ezra?
Because she's got a certain look on her face about, you know, Thrawn's lack of committing or whatnot. And it seems like, I couldn't tell if she's like... I don't know which read is correct. Does she hate Baylan and is only using him reluctantly to achieve her goals? Does she admire Baylan and is chagrined that they're potentially, you know, going to get him killed by not giving him enough support? How do you feel like she feels? Because
I feel like it was more about Sabine. Like, once the Dathomiri said, hey, she's important. She's dangerous. She's got the stink of the Jedi on her. That's maybe Morgan took that to heart and said, we have to destroy Sabine. But Thrawn had already like released her.
Yeah, I felt like there's like the Great Mothers who just fucking hate Jedi and distrust mm-hmm. them and don't like them at all. And Thrawn's that same way, too, because, you know, he doesn't care much for Jedi. And then you've got, obviously, the Jedi and the not quite uh-huh. Jedi, the former Jedi. But she seems like somewhere in the middle. She's not as hardline.
Yeah.
As the Great Mothers. But then the Great Mothers say she's a credit to Dathomir. So I don't know. I just like there was a couple. You know, like I said with the Darth Grimes and with some of these other characters, Darth Swanson, I'm just not quite sure emotionally where they're at with what's going on.
Maybe she's just a main character with nothing to do at the moment. And so you throw a scene in here with something for her to say. Because like her goal is accomplished. She found Thrawn. They're on the way back. Like she has nothing to do now.
Yeah, in fact, all like even the Great Mothers essentially are, you know, anytime Grand Admiral asks them something, they're like, ah, destiny fates us to serve you, Grand Admiral. And it's like, well, mm-hmm. you guys are entirely just add-on functionaries to Thrawn at this point. You're right. They've passed the plot narrative. So there's a bunch of powerful characters that no longer have anything to do other than die or, I don't know, take a minor role as a big bad in the spinoff.
Sure. I do wonder if Thrawn's going to take any witches with him. Witches might come in handy. You know, if he goes back to the galaxy we know, that might be handy.
Oh, yeah, they burn well. You can
sure, you get you know, when he's knocking back beers with the Purgles, you need a fire going, right?
Yeah, you get 20, 30 light years per witch at the rate they burn in the reactor. Okay. You know, they're just really good that way.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what comes of Morgan, I guess, because I don't know where she goes from here. Sabine is pissed at the Haller for running during the fight, and she tries to send it back where it came from, but it follows her until she gives another chance. Then the Haller picks up a scent, and they ride off toward it. And it leads them to a creature disguised as a rock, and that creature recognizes her Mandalorian symbol and shows her its matching necklace. She asks if they know Ezra, and they start leading her somewhere.
To me, this scene is the price you pay to get family Star Wars entertainment, and I'll happily pay it. Like, this is not offensive. It's cute. It's well-designed.
It's pretty long.
It is a little long, but, like, you know, this is the thing. Yeah, this is what the 5- and 6-year-olds really like, you know?
I suppose. I was getting a little foot tappy in the scene.
As an owner operator of one 10 years ago, I'm telling you, like that shit, like where the adults call out, like the fact that this alien's trying to hide in the exact same way twice, like that trick ain't gonna work. All they eat that shit up. They love that shit.
Yeah,
because they're like, oh, that was me 3 years ago, and I didn't understand object permanence. A fucking idiot. And they're like, you know.
Also blaming your Haller for abandoning you. That's probably fine.
Right, yeah. It's like when you blame your kid sister or brother for doing some shit. And yeah, it's like I said, I thought it was cute. I actually like these hermit crab people. I think they're pretty cool. I don't know if I'm like long term going to be enamored with them. I don't know if they're going to like, that's the other thing. I was like, every time I see something like this, I'm like, oh God, how am I going to feel about dozens of these taking down stormtroopers, because inevitably that's the fate of young quasi animal sidekick species in this universe.
I want them to be like gremlins, where they have this dark side, this it comes out at night or whatever, you know.
Yeah, like 8 of them swarm, they pop up the ground, swarm a stormtrooper and just tear them apart,
then it, like they part and it's just bones.
Yeah, all the shells just cover and just scream, and his empty bloody shells spill out from the pile. And they're like, still with a super cute, you give a thumbs up, blood dripping from their shellera or their pedipalps. Give a
that
thumbs
doesn't
up.
Doesn't sound like Disney to me. But
no.
What do I know?
yeah, but It's fine. You know,
my only complaint is it's a little long, but whatever. Yeah.
Especially that's the other thing about, like, it's really belabored. Filoni must really like the species he's created, because if this is a little long, her long trail through their encampment, when you know at the end it's going to be Ezra, I felt that one was a super, like, oh my god, like, already.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, imagine in Return of the Jedi, if there was, like, a 5-minute scene of, like, Luke and Han going into the Ewok camp, you know, looking at the Ewoks raising their children, and, oh, they're cooking on a fire, and, oh, they're weaving their nets there, and, oh, they're building some traps, and, oh, they're doing... And then you finally, after that, Princess Leia comes up and says, oh, yay, what's up? Took you long enough.
They do that, it's just, like, 30 seconds instead.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
5 minutes.
Like, we already know what's happening here, and it's like there's no reason for us to feel this affection for these creatures and to get this. It's just they're just really slow blowing you on the Ezra reveal. And
yeah,
if you're a Rebel fan, maybe that type of extended blowing is appreciated, warranted. But me, I'm just like, yes, I get it. This is Ezra.
Mm-hmm.
Bring his tune looking ass out. Let me see it.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to Baylan and Shin real quick. They reach the spot where Sabine killed the bandits. Shin asks if Baylan misses the Jedi Order. Some parts of it, at least the idea of it. And he says something here calls to him, though, and the Jedi were weak. It's a part he doesn't miss. More bandits arrive, and they plan to befriend them, I guess. I don't know.
They're the Noti. The subtitles let me know creatures. that they're the Noti. They're not identified by name at any point in the episode, but
I like to call them the Naughty.
The Naughty. They actually might be. Yeah. Again, since they, and it's like, is that what they call themselves?
Probably. Although they have clicks and it's hums and stuff for their language.
Pretty
so
humany,
no.
Pretty humany sound and speech from crab people, I would say, though. I was expecting a lot more wet clicks and chitterings and, you know,
it's
vibrations
sure,
and
but...
hissing and striations from a crab people. But, you know, they're essentially Ewoks. They speak like Ewok.
I like the materials they're made of. Seems like there's some kind of iridescent, like mollusk-esque kind of quality to them.
The whole look and feel of these people reminded me a lot of, like, the Harfoots, the proto-hobbits on the Amazon Rings of Power series. You know, they've got these... Mm-hmm. They're very secretive. Their whole deal is they hide out of sight from larger threats. So
they,
like,
roam. You know, yeah, they don't stay in one place very long.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of cross-cultural pollination going on in science fiction fantasy right now.
We've already talked about these rock creatures. Let's talk about Baylan and Shin. What did you think of this scene?
Baylan and Shin. What did I think of this scene?
He's talking about the Jedi Order and, you know, what's bad about it. What does he mean when he says he likes the idea of it? Because he also says he doesn't like the weakness that they portrayed.
I think he likes the idea of paragons of justice and goodness defending the galaxy, and he thinks the weakness was the Jedi's inability to protect themselves from, in like, they like, I'm is he one of those, like, they respected democracy too much, like, you know, like, sure, they saw this weirdo taking over and instituting martial law and building up an army, and they uncritically went along with it, even though they had misgivings. And if they don't, yeah, I think that he's a woulda, coulda, shoulda Jedi, that, like, if only he were the master in charge of the Order, he would have been smart enough to see through that, and he would have arrested the right people. And, you know, the idea, like, of, but I don't know. He also says he's a student of history, so maybe he's got a systemic critiques, and that's, like, he wants to institute a perfect society. But you know what? Not a good history of that. You know, if you're a student of history, not a great track record for people intentionally trying to generate and create a utopia. So that's why I lean really heavy on him wanting to start, like, his perfect society, because he's talking about, you know, it's like, I never saw a future with the Jedi. I knew it was inevitable they'd collapse. And she's like, well, you see one here? And he's like, what I saw once is the once great witch kingdom of Dathomir. And the other thing about fleeing a power greater than my own, does something call, like, I got so many ideas, but they're again, it's all filtered through 30-year-old memories of reading Heir to the Empire. So we probably need the wait on that one, too, till we get to the little spoiler section we're going to have.
Okay. We do that. He talks about what kind of Jedi Ezra is. He's a Bokken? Bokken Jedi?
Bokken,
essentially,
yeah.
Ones that are trained just kind of willy-nilly after the Jedi Temple fell. He's one of the new breed of Jedi. I thought that was interesting.
It's a neat little piece of world building. Apparently, it's created new from the show, and it's Filoni seems to be doing this a lot, taking real life words from like Japanese culture. Bokken is a wooden training sword, mm-hmm. and he's like, there's this like this like he's the same way that you might say a knight is a hedge knight in Game of Thrones. Like, oh, he's a knight. He got knighted once, but he's got no lord or master, no lands. You know, he's a hedge knight because he sleeps under a hedge on the side of the road rather than in a castle like a proper knight should. And him kind of like, you know, Jedi knights are trained at the Jedi Temple and they had real practice laser swords and they had droids and they had this and that. And these like hedge knights with their wooden swords. And we saw Sabine being trained with one of those Bokken wooden swords. So it's like, I thought it was nice. Like, he's dismissively talking about all these. Like, Luke Skywalker would be a Bokken Jedi, right?
Technically, yeah. He wasn't trained under any organization.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's neat him disparaging someone like the Wino has got this huge impact. I mean, he's the one to overthrow the Galactic Empire. And he's disparaging them. But it's also interesting about what he's trying to do with Darth Grimes, make her something greater than a Jedi. What's that?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you what he's thinking, because if a Sith tells me that, I'm thinking, well, he just wants to make you a Sith. But like, I don't know I don't know how to label this guy.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see if we get there by the end of the season. So Sabine is taken to the rock creature camp, the Noni camp, where she's reunited with Ezra. He asks how she found him, but she says, we'll talk about that later. Then he says, he can't wait to go home. She says, we'll talk about that later.
Dude, I mean, that's the delicious part of the scene is like, as happy as you are to see these people reunited, it's, you know, it's like not overly demonstrative, but like it felt right from what I understand of their characters. And then they embrace and they're very happy. But like, yeah, honestly, he's got all these questions and she can't give him a single satisfying answer because she knows this is a bad idea. She like I feel like I already know what he's going to say. Like, what the fuck? I was willing to kill myself to take this guy out of the galaxy and you brought him back. And now we're together, but we can't go home. We can't see any of our friends. Like, this was literally for you. No one else. None of our other friends. None of the people I left at home. None of the people in Loth. Like, it's literally just, I don't, like, it's got to be a big, massive breach in their relationship.
Yeah. And I think that's compelling and interesting. I think, you know, for all the stuff that we've been pointing at Sabine and saying, God, I can't believe she's like this. This is a huge mistake. I think the show is about to bring that back around right now.
I do too. I have faith.
The person whose opinion she values the most is going to tell her she was wrong to do it. Like, Ahsoka can say that all day and she's just going to ignore her.
Mm-hmm.
But for Ezra to say it to her face after she saved him and say it wasn't worth it. And in fact, this is not something you did that makes me proud. It's dishonoring the sacrifice that I had come to terms with, the sacrifice I had made. There's no other way this goes, you know.
And the fact that she's stranded on a planet that's steeped in the dark side, like, I think there's a lot of things that are pointing to at least a short-term kind of heel turn for Sabine here.
Yeah, and I think it could result in some character growth, which I hope. You know, maybe not be so single-minded about things, maybe to take a more holistic approach.
It also fits in so well with Ahsoka's character, if you want to go with the Star Wars kind of rhyming, lyrical nature of its storytelling, is that, you know, Ahsoka, who was raised by this master who fell to the dark side, was later redeemed. She is raising, you know, trying to train her Padawan, falls to the dark side, needs to be redeemed. Like, the fact that she's like the bridge of redemption on both sides of this, and Anakin saying there might be hope for you. Like, it seems like there's a lot of preparing her for have this. And I know that also, yes, I wish I didn't. I wish I actually know too much to properly enjoy this. I know that like Filoni's got a whole arc of Mando that's going to lead up to, I think, either a trilogy of movies or a Thrawn movie. So it's like they're, you know, and these are all, these would all be excellent hooks to lay that on. Some kind of resurgent neutral Jedi order. You know, Sabine as a this powerful dark side user that finally gets access to the Force through her giving in to her anger and to her, and it's all going to be fueled by her friend's rejection of her sacrifice and the weight of, I mean, it's, yeah, it sounds cool, honestly, as I'm saying it.
Sure.
So let's, yeah. But I imagine there's a lot of like Rebel fans like covering their ears, but oh no, not because like, yeah, it'd be like Luke Skywalker having a dark side stint, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's not fun to think about.
There are probably a lot of people watching the prequels for the first time going, no, Annie, why are you doing this? Right?
True.
But yeah, in the larger arc, it's very satisfying. And then the Great Mothers call Thrawn to say that Ahsoka is on the way. And Thrawn demands to know everything about Ahsoka and tells Morgan to destroy any approaching Star Whales with prejudice. And he seems to be shitting all over Baylan here. You know, he was once a Jedi. We must regard him as flawed. It's interesting.
That's the other thing that they never, like, as an adult thinking about Thrawn, sometimes it comes across Zahn's work as, you know, one of those things where, like, you know a little bit about tactics. It can be dangerous and strategy because it's like, you know, if Thrawn's whole big deal is he won't ever discount a threat until he's personally assured that it's not a threat or whatever. That's another way of saying someone's going to be paralyzed by indecision.
Mm-hmm.
Because how can you rule out, like, There's a fair amount of, like, especially tactics and strat, it's about daring. Like, I think I have a material advantage here. The intel is sketchy, but I just, like, this is, and people to wait until their certainty are going to, but, like, I don't know. He's right. He's always going to be right because he's written by the writers to be. I just wonder, how do you properly prepare for a Jedi, you know?
I don't really know. You get some Force users on your side, I suppose, to fight them when they do show up.
Jordy has. Yeah, I'm curious
kinda,
to see.
But I don't know if he's on. Because that's the thing about his comment here about Baylan. You know, he was once a Jedi. He's flawed. I don't think he trusts Baylan to be that guy. Like, if Jedis did show up to try and defeat him, I don't know that he thinks Baylan has his back.
That's what I'm saying. I think the unspoken thing here is that there's a non-zero chance in Thrawn's mind that Baylan's in on all this.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
You know, that, like, but also,
or
it's
at
like,
the very least, he's not to be trusted.
Right. But how do you 100% uncritically trust the Witches of Dathomir, right?
Sure. Uh-huh.
I mean, just because they're saying the threat of destiny demands it, Grand Admiral, like, yeah, they want off of this planet. They want off this planet real bad.
From a certain point of view, the threat of destiny demands it.
They're willing to blow a lot of blue sunshine up your ass, Thrawn, because they, but like, yeah, but I don't know. Maybe with Enoch, he has a conversation where he doesn't trust anybody, but
yeah.
And the death and resurrection of games played by both Witch and Jedi. Very true. It feels like there's four or five episodes left of plot and they only have two. So I'm wondering if they have a way to bring this particular storyline to a really satisfying conclusion. If this is going to feel like a Dune Part One situation where you're really just waiting for Mandalorian to tell the rest of the story and this bore, you know.
That's the thing. This hasn't really felt like, well, with the exception of last episode, I don't feel like this has felt like an Ahsoka show. It's felt like a Sabine show, much more so. I don't know what's going to happen with a trilogy of movies that they supposedly want to do centered around Thrawn. Like, how do you tell a story that goes on from here that doesn't get delayed by waiting for three fucking movies, you know? And is Ahsoka next season just going to be like, well, we dealt with the Sabine and Thrawn stuff. Now let's have Ahsoka go do other things. and then they're going to hold all that stuff for the trilogy? These are the same questions we were asking about The Mandalorian. And
yeah,
we know how that turned out. It was kind of fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't trust him to thread this stuff logically or interestingly.
Yeah, and I'm trying to compare this to like what Marvel did on the Thanos side. And it's like Thanos was teased for a long time before he actually, you know, and you got the mm-hmm. Infinity Stones. But like once they got the like Thanos, like when Thanos came, that was like the thing that they dealt with until it was over, right?
Yeah.
Whereas like if they do that, like, okay, yeah, you could have a four or five series movie build up to the thing that you actually want to say. But like they've already revealed Thrawn in too big of a way.
Yeah.
Like, I will not accept him returning to the Star Wars galaxy and just chilling for a couple of movies in the background. Although maybe they will be good, you know, like he'll be back, but the New Republic will be like, oh, he's just one admiral with one Star Destroyer. How big of a threat could he be? And they just like let him fester into the galaxy and they don't take it seriously. He's
consolidating power. Yeah.
Starts to solidify. It's like, okay, I've just talked myself into it. They could totally do that. And you just get like these whispers.
But they've done too much on the. I feel like they've done too much in that regard too, because a lot of these series have been about the power consolidated, just waiting for him to return. So like,
yeah, I don't know. So maybe they, like I said, they're going to be ready for this. Cause I want to correct myself. I haven't heard a trilogy of movies. I've heard that this will finish in one theatrical release.
Oh, okay. That sounds a lot easier.
It'll culminate. Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know how many series it's going to worm its way through either. Whether it's going to be, you know, touched on a Mandalorian, another season of Ahsoka, and then this is set up to be pretty compelling, pretty accurate to my understanding of Thrawn. I am willing to see how this season plays out, and assuming that they don't completely shit the bed, which I find very unlikely at this point, I will be in for following this plot wherever it goes to as many seasons of television I have to watch.
Gotcha.
And that's the thing. Yeah. I guess if they're going to, like, maybe now they got their shit together and they're going to force me to watch Star Wars, as long as it's good, as long as it's this good, as long as it never gets worse than The Mandalorian, I think I'll be fine with that. And I'm engaged with the storyline.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I'll still be a lot more in the mode of like an Andor for sure. I mean, this stuff is okay. It's just not my cup of tea, especially when like Ahsoka's been fairly good. I would say with like the exception of one episode, maybe
the third episode
has been pretty solid,
and the third episode is like this episode without Thrawn. You know, it's like kind of like this set, you know, transitioning to the next storyline, getting everything, you know, getting everybody on the same piece of the board. So I'm with you. Like, I think this would be kind of fine, like baseline Mandalorian fine. But I think episodes 4 and 5 elevated it. And if 7 and 8 pay off, like the, you know, we had a slow kind of ho-hum third that set up the four or five. If 6 does the same thing for 7, 8, and like we could be in for a real damn treat, man.
Yeah, we'll see. I do.
You are wise to not lower your defenses. I get it. But I'm gonna put my heart a little bit on my sleeve. I'm rooting for the show at this point.
Yeah. If Filoni slays me, I'm not coming back as a Force ghost this time. As a Star Wars ghost, I'm done. I'm done.
Can't
Sorry.
Do it.
Fool me Only once so many... with the prequels. Shame on you. Fool me twice with whatever they're doing here.
Only so Shame many on times me. These kids can summon you back to the swamps of Dagobah to sit on a log and talk to them about their Star Wars canon. You're just like, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm done. Don't summon me unless you want that pain.
And then they were really right on that border, man, between like Obi-Wan I didn't even watch because...
Dude. Andor completely fucking turned it around.
It's the only thing that brought me back. Like, Mandalorian Season 2 wasn't enough to do it, and the Book of Boba Fett just shit on my love for Star Wars. And then there was Obi-Wan. But then Andor, and I'm like, yes, Star Wars can be good.
My last flicker of Star Wars fanboy was guttering out, and then and it was like looking pretty bad starting episode 3 of Andor, even, because...
Oh, I know you didn't like the early goings, but
I didn't. I still maybe I
understand why not. But I was hooked right away with that show.
I need to go back and rewatch the first couple because, like, you know, I was antagonistic. I was going
stuff.
In.
I think
was,
you're right. It's
I was, and I'll admit it. I was fucking around on my cell phone. I was in there. Like, I don't want to watch this. I want to watch three episodes, go on OTC and say this is another bullshit, mediocre Star Wars, and I'm well shot of it. But instead, at the end of three, I said, Jim, at the end of the gym, I'm like, Jim.
Yeah.
Just when I thought I was out. They dragged me back
and,
in.
And I wasn't going to watch it until I heard the reviews come in, and everybody was saying it was amazing, right? So, yeah, they need to continue that streak. They need to do stuff that is as good as the best of Mandalorian, the best of Ahsoka, and Andor. And they can keep me on this line.
If they want the cranky old Star Wars folks part of the movement. I mean, they don't have to do this shit. There are
I'm going to be around for another 40 years. They can milk me. Milk me. I want to be milked. So let's do this. I just got to be milked right. Gently.
Yeah, they can milk him in a nursing home if they play their cards right.
Yeah.
The milk going to dry up if they start trying to squeeze too hard. Just like Princess Leia said, the harder you squeeze the Star Wars fans' teeth, the less milk slips between your fingers. That's a Dave Filoni. That's a Dave Filoni Princess Leia quote, I believe. The exact quote. Do not neglect your training. We'll be right back. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp starting April 3rd. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
Let's see what knowledge lurks inside this podcast. Here's more Tribe of Two.
All right, yeah. Do you want to talk about the Silmarillion then?
Are you referring to the Star Wars legends that us old coots use to theorize?
Salamari? And The Isolimris?
It's spelled like the town of Ypsilanti, Michigan. So I kind of always pronounce it like Isolar Salami.
The Salamis,
I used to call them Y Salami when I was a kid. I knew that wasn't what was pronounced, but it was a fun way to do it. I think it's Salamari is what it seems like. But
this is what I assume is in those coffin-shaped cargo containers.
Just if you don't want spoilers for Heir to the Empire, the old Timothy Zahn trilogy. Skip ahead to the feedback a little bit. We're only going to be talking this for a bit. So you think, explain to people who want to know what the Y Salamari are.
I, I don't know that I can properly explain it. My understanding of it is that they are some kind of being that is has some force inhibiting capabilities.
Yeah, they're described as like these salamander looking like lizards that are like kind of like an earthbound sloth, and they cling to this particular branch. And the idea that Thrawn had is he would take cylinders of these creatures that would produce a bubble that negates the force. Like anything within this bubble, this natural bubble that they create, you step in there, like Luke would lose his connection to the force. You know, couldn't use any of his force powers. And it's one of the multiple things, the tricks up Thrawn's sleeve he had to... Because like the Heir to the Empire is basically about Thrawn coming back from an extragalactic mission, finding the galaxy with the Empire in full retreat. They're out into just outer remnants. There's just a few warlords that the New Republic are mounting. And he's
parents,
trying to...
The Empire came home after a night out and found that their kid had a party in their house.
Right.
Everything's trashed. Yeah. Puke on the couch. Yeah.
So Thrawn has a lack of ships and a lack of men and a need to get a bunch of ships, a bunch of men, and forge them into a well-trained, well-coordinated fighting force. And he has a couple of things to pull that off. One, to get the men... He gets a bunch of cloning cylinders. We didn't have the Kamino cloners back then. It was some other, but like there's the, you know, cloners. He got a bunch of clones and he's going to make a bunch of clones. And there is an instability with clones. It turned out crazy. And his theory is that something about the force weeded them out as unnatural and caused some echoes. So I think his whole deal is he lined his cloning facilities with those force-repelling salamanders so he could grow clones clean without that force contamination. That's how he made non-insane clones. Mm-hmm. Then to get his ships, he stole, there's like this whole mothball, I think is like this, I don't know, it's kind of ridiculous in retrospect, like 100 old galactic cruisers that he's going to use for his Navy. He went to go steal from the old Republic moth yard. And then third, he's got all these clones that don't know what they're doing. He used this old Jedi master, a cloned Jedi master, to force puppet them all. Like he'd have all the starships commanded by these clones, but this dark Jedi master would like puppet string them all. I'm wondering if Darth Balin is going to, the thing he's going to awaken is going to be some warlock of Dathomir, some dark force user that's going to essentially be the Joris Kaboth, the old clone Jedi master. Mm-hmm. I wonder if the witch's body is going to have some kind of natural force repellent, like you said, Solaris. And then he's just going to just do the clones because the clones have now... This is back before we knew what the Clone Wars were, and I think Zahn's impersonation was they tried to clone to build up an army, and they all went insane and rebelled. That's no longer canon, obviously. You can just clone, just get the Kamino cloning facilities raised. And I think you've got essentially Heir to the Empire... airdropped into the Filoniverse.
Makes a lot of sense with what we're seeing here. I do wonder if like Balin's goal with him going to the beginning is maybe tied up in those White Salamis as well, like, and trying to destroy that. If he's trying to destroy the Force itself, that could be a big hint, right?
There's something about these witches have some kind of Force negation that they've discovered, that there's like, well, if you just do that bigger, well, if you do a galactic size,
Yeah, which is kind of where my head was at, theorizing about his goals. I don't know. It's going to be super interesting seeing what they pull from Heir to the Empire and what they don't.
I did wonder if there is something about the... Because when they pulled the things from the crypts, they look kind of like cloning pods. I was wondering like if it were the Dathomir all like a clone species or something, and they're just going to essentially play that straight up.
So you think they're going to do away with the Y Salamis in favor of just having the Dathomiri be...
Well, there's also this like canonical thing in the Force. What, I don't know if it's still canonical, but the idea that why did Yoda hide on Dagobah? Why did he choose
to avoid
that?
Detection?
because he's this bright light source mm-hmm. of force power, and he found a planet that had that cave, that strong dark side cave, that it's like, you know, you have this extreme positive and negative charge that cancel each other out. If you're Darth Vader looking for these ripples in the force, they just they're like noise canceling headphones. So like the idea of like a concentrated evil body could negate a light side user, I think, is something that they could go for. Or they could just be like the Dathomiri mm-hmm. witches, have a particular metal or mineral or technique that allows them to repel the force. I don't know. Something about that. But the other piece of puzzle I don't see where they're going to come from at all is the ships. Where is he going to get the material that he needs? But maybe they're going to just literally steal, like they've had this like whole plot line of the New Republic, you know, turning swords to plowshares. They're essentially decommissioning all the Star Destroyers, and they're essentially intact, just waiting to be. I wonder if he's going to break into a Republic scrapyard and steal 1,000 of them or something.
There's also a pretty large group of loyalists, or high-ranking seeming group of loyalists we've seen from time to time in these shows.
Well-placed in the production facilities and the reclamation facilities and the yes, there is a shadow government waiting for Thrawn to kind of take over. Yeah.
Yeah, so they might just, Thrawn's back, let's defect.
What happened to the Sith fleet that Palpatine somehow created in the Rise of Skywalker movie? Because there was like 1,000 pristine Star Destroyers there. Did they all get destroyed because they didn't have shields, or they were still in the atmosphere, or Poe Dameron is just a really cool dude? Because I saw that movie once, and
me too.
That was enough. Did a podcast on it. Done. Checked it off my list. Okay, I think that's it for our discussion of Legends. We got people in here in our feedback that want to. StarWarsAtBaldMove.com is how you join Fight Club. Zach's up first. It says, I am not familiar with the EU canon/non-canon material. I wonder if there's an example of a Jedi who was not connected to the Republic. From what I've seen, the Jedi are either Republic space cops, Sith, or dead. Since it's a religion, I wondered if there were examples of what Jedi were before. Dude.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the thing. I do not know of a conception of the Star Wars galaxy that does not have the Jedi in it. I actually looked, because like they go back all the way 10,000 years to the Old Republic, to like the legendary era. The Jedi were there, and it's worse than even it's worse than I even thought. I think these are Star Wars legends. These have not been re-brought into the continuity, but in the Star Wars legends, there was an ancient people called the Jedhai, which is Jedi with an extra apostrophe in the middle of it and like three eyes instead of one. And they lived on this planet that 35,000 years before the Battle of Yavin, before the Old Republic, the Jedhai lived on this planet, which had two natural moons, one that was perpetually showing its light side to the planet and one which was tidally locked to show its dark side to the planet. And these people came to appreciate the Force through that entire dynamic. They invented the light side and dark side dichotomy because of their cosmology. And as they advanced, they did things like they saw like this balance of the Force, like the Jedi would go on to do. And apparently when their adherents would get too imbalanced, either towards the light or the dark, they would exile them on their respective moons for them to be isolated and meditate so they can get back into balance. So If there is a better answer than that of like what was before the Jedi, I don't know, because as far as I can tell, the Jedi have always been in this galaxy, and their civil war that kind of split a faction of the Jedi off that when they became the Galactic Jedi, they're just an offshoot of that religion. So it's like it seems like in the Star Wars mythos, it's Jedi all the way down. Now, there are lots of other Force-using traditions. You've got the Keldor Barrando sages, where they eschewed using the Force for combat. They would just use it to like meditate on their people's future, to guide them through correct decision-making processes, and they're used as seers and sages. There's the Angti monks, who rejected the Force having a light-side dichotomy and viewed it as like a spectrum, a full rainbow spectrum that individuals should exhibit. But like, I don't know. These are all like the majority of these are all kind of like fleshed out in the comic books or obscure novel, and
probably, you know, don't apply anymore.
But it's the idea of like they're like it's a, like Star Wars is very universalist. What do they call the universal universe? What are the branch of religion? Unitarian Universalists.
Mm-hmm.
In that, like, you can worship it in very many ways, but everything at the end is the Force. Like, I even read an article this morning to explain, like, the Ewoks, you know, like, witch doctor guy, Logray. Yeah. That he was like, that's like, he didn't know it, but he's in all the powers that he was actually low-key using the Force. So, like, did you catch the Dathomir's magic? You know, they're not Force users. They use magic with a K. It's all Force. So Dave says, I thought you'd appreciate this YouTube clip of Mark Hamill complaining about some of the dialogue George Lucas expected him to say in the original Star Wars film. Mark's comment at the end is priceless. This is an old Johnny Carson interview from the late 70s, and I thought if our producer is kind, we could just drop this clip in here. This is a clip of him. He's just a short clip of him giving this line of dialogue that he got George Lucas to the drop about. He says, but we can't turn back now. Fear is their greatest defense. I doubt if the actual security there is any greater than it was on Aqualish or Sullish. And what there is most likely directed toward large scale assault. And it's just like him joking about how you can't say that shit.
Yeah, I thought he had a particularly devastating quote at the end. Like, his description of the dialogue was devastating. Like, it's world-ending or something. Or, like...
He in this particular quote, he said, like, come on, George. We're the ones that are going to get rotten vegetables thrown at us. Like, this dialogue's so bad that they're going to go down as, like, these infamously bad actors. I think Harrison Ford is the one that says, George, you can write this shit, but you can't say it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is... And especially with his direction being faster, more intense, like, you can even hear in that clip, like, if you go much faster, Aqualish and Sullish start to run together, and it's just Aqualish, and that's no good. So, this is a well-known problem that George has had for a long time. Like, experienced directors go in and be like, okay, whatever, I'm going to do whatever, and that's how you get just amazing things out of Alec Guinness. And Jesus, who is the guy? Who's Grand Moff Tarkin? Peter Cushing. Wait, is that true? I thought Peter Mayhew is Chewbacca. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you'll get the veteran actors that just kind of like, okay, I get what this material is going for, and I need to be this particular archetype. But the young talent seems to get just kind of twist in the wind.
You're going to tell the director no when he tells you that sand is coarse and it gets everywhere. You're not going to tell him no.
And see, that's the thing. It's like, so Mark Hamill's talking about, like, they used to push back. They got this line taken out of the film because it was so bad. Like, George used to respond to people's, like, you know, he used to call on and have people help him. Like, there's, you know, like, Star Wars is largely conceived as being saved into editing. Like, what George actually came up with was such a mess, and he had a couple of really talented editors, including one of his former wives, that kind of, like, saved it in the editing bay. So, yeah, like I said, you can say a lot of things about George Lucas. Really technically oriented, really has an eye for a shot and composition, hugely inventive in terms of world building, and, like, coming up with, like, just insane, like, really ingenious concepts like Indiana Jones and Star Wars, but actually meat and potatoes, directing living flesh and blood actors through lines and dialogue and sets, not so much. Move on. Ethan says, I am indeed one of those younger Star Wars fans who grew up in the Clone Wars and have two quick things. I am shocked, just shocked, that people are pressuring you to watch all of the Clone Wars. Any real Clone Wars fans will admit to you that they do not need to see the whole show to understand or enjoy it. It's an anthology show with completely disconnected episodes in terms of both storylines and chronology. As a fan, there's probably a good season or two worth of episodes that I haven't even seen. I appreciate a young guy like you, Ethan, releasing us from the burden of having to watch the Clone Wars and Rebels. It's so appreciated.
Yeah. Come on. Pull up a chair on the lawn. Crack open a beer next to the Purgle.
He continues, here's my proposition that's a middle ground. Ah, god damn it. He had us in the first half. Here's his one weird trick to invest 10 hours into the Clone Wars and Rebels that will completely change our mind about the material. I don't know about this. So some lawful evil behavior, Ethan. Some real Darth Swanson tactics. No, he's just like, you know, there's like, you know, three or four little. And then here's the thing. I don't know if you recall this, but I actually did invest in time to watch a 4-episode mini arc, like at the very beginning of the Mandalorian experience. And I was chagrined to find out that it was 2.5 hours of cartoons that were barely relevant, like 4 or 5 sentences relevant to the thing that I was watching. And I'm like, never again. So. No, I don't want to do. I did watch a 30-minute primer on the Dave Filoni universe, which I found kind of helpful. Helpful to make better jokes about the material. I don't think it's actually but anyway, so secondly, I don't know if you've already talked about this before, but for me, what I think is diluting these Star Wars stories is an attempt to turn these shows into their own version of the Marvel Cinematic Universe of interconnected stories. Yep. I think it's absurd the storylines of one show resolve in a different show, or that as fans, one should be required to watch a 4-season cartoon to understand the latest live-action series. This method most certainly leads to faster burnout and quantity over quality level of storytelling. One of the reasons Andor rules as much as it did is because it didn't have this burden of having to connect the stories between 5 different shows, movies, books, and games. Curious to hear your thoughts on this issue of studios trying to use the Marvel Universe method with every franchise now. Thanks.
Yeah, the MCU itself is too much. And now everything is going to be that? That's insane. Yeah, Disney's model worked until it didn't work, and they tried to push it too far with the Star Wars stuff.
Yeah, I mean, so, and the other thing is, like, the cool thing about Marvel is that they... I mean, this is a universe that was conceived of having all these heroes having their individual adventures that would once in a while come together for a giant size issue or a summer crossover event or something like that. So you've got built in like all these independent narratives where like what Doctor Strange does doesn't impact what Spider-Man does, but every once in a while they'll work to get right. Whereas this is like every fucking thing has to be set within 10 years of the Battle of fucking Yavin. Like, And I'm not the only one. So can we not, like we just talked about 10,000 years ago, the Knights of the Real Old Republic. Can we not just like jump back 1,000 years into the past and just tell a Star Wars story about Jedi Knights that we don't know and a Sith threat that we don't understand and weird alien can we not do that? Or can we not get like 1,000 years in the future? And here's an idea. Fuck the Jedi. Fuck the Sith. Let's look at the bounty hunters. Let's look at the... You know, the Grand Army of the Republic. Like, what? I don't know. I just feel like there's so much room for storytelling, and they try to fit all these stories in this itty bitty little section, and they do it well. It succeeds in making the galaxy look so fucking small, right? Like, it's not inconceivable. It's not inconceivable that Peter Parker would run into Captain America. They operate on the same fucking planet. It is wild that Darth Vader built C-3PO and that Yoda was best friends with Chewbacca. You know, like...
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It does make everything feel very small. But I guess that's less of a complaint. I have a complaint more with the model itself, not the setting. I think you could tell... I mean, like, how much time do you think spans... a lot of these Marvel movies. I mean, if you take out like a Thor or something where you're going to different universes or whatever, you could see all this happening in 10 years, right?
It's kind of runs in real time.
So like they could tell a bunch of different interesting stories in a 10 year span if they really wanted to. The thing that bothers me is the model. It's the oversaturation of it, putting out too much stuff and just tiring out the fan. The feeling that if I miss any of it, I'm doomed to not understand the rest of it. And that's the thing that kills me. It's the stupid thing they did with Book of Boba Fett and Mandalorian. Just the callousness that shows, or the cynicism, right? Like, we're going to throw all this out there. We're going to make you watch it all so that we can get our numbers up, so that we can make more money. And that's clear. That's all it is to them, right? It doesn't have any of the special relationship with Star Wars that fans have had over the years. It's been a lot of people's lives, and Disney is just treating it as another way to make an enormous profit.
And doing it out in the, like,
that's what they do.
Out in the open, like when they have, every time they have these like Star Wars roadmaps that they unveil to the fans, it, like, you know, it feels like, oh, this is the ATM machine that's going to be printing money for the next 2 years, right? You uh-huh. know, and like I feel like as a fan, it kind of turns me off when it's like, yeah, it's like not like we are excited to tell these. It's more of like, here is the next slop that's going to be coming down the pike.
Yeah, here's the next thing that's going to make us $1 billion. And it's, they've been chastised on this, right? Look at the movie state of Star Wars. Fans have said, your approach sucks and we don't want any part of it. Mm-hmm. And they stopped making fucking Star Wars movies. Mm-hmm. They stopped because they had a plan, man. They were going to do this until the end of time. And it turns out the end of time was just like three movies in.
Right, because they had no plan. They had the plan to print the money, but they had no idea of why we would want to give them our money, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, well, it's Star Wars. We paid $2 billion. It's going to make us, you know, $2 billion a year in perpetuity, and they just didn't do it. I think the other problem...
forcing me to watch one show so that I can understand another show is not a blueprint to make money either. Trust
and we
me.
If you listen to our coverage of this, like, we laid all this out of, like, you know, like, even the hardcore fans are not going to be able to like, every fucking week there's one or sometimes two and a half hours of Marvel shit to watch, and then mm-hmm. It's like, man, like, and the other thing is, like, Disney knows that not everyone's going to watch those things, so, like, they have to be sidecars to the movie. They can never be the main event. You know, if the movies touch on them, they have to explain it well enough for the or that. And it's like Marvel's even starting to have trouble with that. The other thing is
turning creativity into a factory, I think, is a mistake.
Well,
it's doomed to failure. Like, you cannot mechanize people's creativity.
I think you can, though. The sad thing is, I think you can, because that's been Walt Disney's entire fucking career, is to chain up talented animators that have brilliant visions and just have them crank out assembly line whimsy for years and years and years. Like, that's what the theme park, like, it's all, like, all kind of running out again. Or maybe it's all just, like, no one can afford this shit anymore. Disney vacations and buying all Star Wars.
They've hit a point of saturation with everything. And they're trying to still step on the gas, and I feel like it's a mistake.
The other thing I think that is a problem in the Star Wars universe that doesn't affect Marvel is, imagine if every Marvel movie that had a superhero team, that you had to always have a Spider-Man, you have to always have an Iron Man, and you have to always have an Asgardian god, and you have to always have a regular dude with no powers. That's the star. Like, every fucking Star Wars show has to have a scoundrel. Mm-hmm. It has to have a Jedi. It has to have a former soldier who's probably now a bounty hunter. It has to, you know, it's like there are all these archetypes that if you don't check, it doesn't feel like Star Wars. But also, there's only so many ways you can rearrange those deck chairs before people notice that the ship is sinking.
And it's why Andor felt so fresh, right? Because it didn't have that perspective. It didn't feel like we have to make this thing that is, it is Star Wars in every possible aspect.
Right.
It said, let's tell a really cool story in this universe, and we'll just take a slice of it, and we'll tell that story.
Literally, let's take the line where Mon Mothma says, many Bothans died to bring us this information, and let's just meditate on what it's like to be a rebel spy.
And the Jedi weren't involved in that, right? So
no Force users.
Get them out of here. We don't need somebody with a lightsaber on this show.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing. Star Wars, if it grows out of its adolescence into adulthood, will get that confidence that, like, and people are going to be like, what about the Bad Batch? What about... There's certainly examples where they hyperfixate on one of the archetypes I talk about. But, like, the actual getting outside the box and telling the story of a whole fucking galaxy is, you know, they got it. It's right there. And I think then they'll either figure it out, or this thing will always just be what it is, you know, which is something that people outgrow and leave behind. Most people, not everybody.
Yeah, and that, you know, Star Wars archetype for a show comes back to my problems with tone with these shows a lot. They all end up feeling the same, right? Every Star Wars thing is starting to feel like every Marvel thing. Mm-hmm. They kind of all just blend together. Just the tone, like every, you know, even the characters, like you were talking about, are kind of similar in a lot of these shows.
The sense of humor, the sensibilities, it is.
And that's another reason Andor was a fresh breath of air, because it didn't go for that same tone at all. It went for a much more adult tone, much more serious tone.
Christine has some Star Wars science to drop on us. Says, my feeling as to why Ahsoka was able to enter the world between worlds instead of dying is because she had previously been resurrected by a god that embodied the light side of the Force called the Daughter. In Clone Wars, Ahsoka, Anakin, and Obi-Wan find this planet called Mortis, then encountered the three gods that are embodiment of the Force. The Father, Balance, the Son, the Light Side, and the Daughter. Oh, wait, Son, the Dark Side, and the Daughter, the Light Side. That's sexist? It's right, like the father is the one that represents the balance, but the son's the dark side. The fuck is that shit? Way to go, way to go. Pan offensive. Long story short, the son possesses Ahsoka with the dark side, trying to get Anakin, and she ends up dying. The son manages to then accidentally kill the daughter when she was trying to kill the father, so he could take. This is like the Walter White saying, "What the fuck are you talking about, Jesse?" meme. What is this? Mm-hmm. Anyway, Ahsoka literally has the life force of the light side god or a celestial within her. I think this is also why Ezra is able to pull her away from Vader before he landed the killing blow later in Rebels using the world between worlds. Fun fact, ever since she's resurrected, there's been a little convor or owl named the Morai that has kept an eye on Ahsoka and has randomly showed up to guide her or to help her in some way. We learned in Rebels through a mural that depicted the three deities with the owl next to the daughter that the Morai has always followed the daughter and is either part of the daughter or some sort of protector. She's the light. Okay, right. The daughter's the good one, not the evil, and that's the son.
Is this in the Noti language? Because I don't understand any of it.
Christine says, I feel like Ahsoka has some sort of godlike power within her. I'm curious to see how far that actually goes. Okay. As someone who has no idea what the hell any of these words mean, I will say that I am not a particularly huge fan of Ahsoka being a reincarnated Force god.
Nope.
That seems way too fan-wankish for Filoni to go down there. I don't like it. I don't like it. And I was like, I don't want Luke to be some Force god either. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to blend these weird concepts. Like, I think it's cool to have Force ghosts.
Yes.
Remnants of the residual remnant of like a Force user who is particularly strong.
But personified versions of the Force?
Like, yeah, not to my taste. How about that?
Yeah, how do you explain that? Like, it's like to me, it's like if there's a guy that you can meet on the other side, it's like, hey, I'm Mr. Force. This is my son, kind of a shit. This is my daughter, lover, perfect angel. I'd be like, well, shit, I guess the Jedi are wrong. This is the true religion, mm-hmm. You know? Like, if I die and there's Yahweh standing for, I got some explaining to do. I'll have to be like, okay, I got this whole thing wrong. Where, you know, or if it's mm-hmm. Lord Shiva or whatever, then it's like, well, okay. You know, didn't get it right. I don't know. That doesn't seem Star Wars-y to me. That seems very Western religious. Well, maybe not. I guess there's a whole pantheon in the Buddhist Hindu traditions, too. I don't like it. It's different and weird, and I'm an old man. How about that?
At least you're honest.
Tobias has other from Sweden as a more grounded possibility is this whole world between worlds business connected to Anakin's efforts to learn how to conquer Padme's death. That I think has some legs, that like Anakin's preoccupation with overcoming death leads him to accidentally backdoor himself into the Qui-Gon Obi-Wan Force Ghost routine, and he would continue that fascination post-death to where he could open these portals kind of up. And I there's a lot of connected tissue that needs to be added there, but I like the concept. What do you think?
Yeah, I could hang with that. I don't know. We'll see.
Kristen says, just wanted to mention that Ahsoka actually has small ear holes on both sides of her head that's slightly lower than a human ears would be, which is why her headpiece does provide ear covers. She sent in a picture, and I'll be damned. No. There are three pinky-sized holes on the side of her head.
Yuck.
That the makeup artist just forgot the contrast shade. Because they're lit extremely fine. Like, they're very hard to see. They're very hard to see.
Not a fan. I don't want to see any more of Ahsoka without her headpiece. Get that headpiece back on, lady.
Yeah, yeah. Cover your holes.
Right?
It's my perspective.
You're indecent. Get your shit together.
Mark says, I've been enjoying your Ahsoka podcast quite a bit and wanted to share my perspective. I'm about to turn 50 and started my Star Wars experience at 9 years old, seeing Empire Strikes Back at the drive-in theater. Pretty nice. Big lawn possibilities for this guy. I'm saying, it's the story's checking out. Mm-hmm. I love the OG trilogy and the 90s novels. The prequels are okay for me. Didn't love them, didn't hate them. At 38 years old, I had my first child. My wife, who's also a casual Star Wars fan, decided that we want to expose our son to Star Wars at an early age, so we went the animated route. He first started watching Rebels around 5 years old, and I absolutely loved it for what it was. Perfectly reasonable. Had a lot of fun with the Tartakovsky's Clone Wars with my son, myself. I think Dave is doing a great job explaining the relationships and plot without excessive exposition. The one plot point missing is what's happened between Ahsoka and Sabine, and that's a plot hole for everyone, as it's never been addressed in the animated shows. I love your take on it because you have a deep core passion for Star Wars, and you are asking questions that, although I know the answer to and often yell back the answers to while listening to your podcast, are perfect for the fans who do not know the answers to ponder. Keep up the amazing work that you do. Between your Ying and the House of R's Yang, I get everything I need each week on my favorite shows and movies. Joe and Mal are super great. It's hard to find podcasters I respect more. And also, I don't think they're all sunshine and Pollyanna over there, too. I think they criticize the show where they think it deserves it. Just it's different places than it. And also, I think, if I recall correctly, Joe and Mal are both almost exactly 10, 15 years younger than us.
Yeah.
So definitely. They're right there on the I want to fuck up your yard demographic. So it's a great, I think it'd be a great companion podcast to ours. Mm-hmm. For sure. Chad says, with Star Wars spanning so many years, it's obvious different generations will appreciate different aspects of this franchise. I don't think any one fan's opinion means less than the next, so I don't think I'm the worst kind of fan because I'm okay with the Star Wars series that haven't been award-winning masterpieces. Yes, I agree the power step B could do better, but I don't think the fault lies with the fans that don't share your point of view. I appreciate the feedback, Chad, but like, no, not a little bit. The fans don't have any responsibility for the shape of their franchise. What do you think about that, Jim?
Well, like I said, they did shape this franchise a bit. They told Disney, no thank you to these movies. No thank you to your haphazard bullshit that you've been calling movies. And they did course correct on that, right?
Yeah. They've foregone, as far as I can tell, $2 billion worth of film revenue by not releasing shitty Star Wars films the last 2-3 years.
For sure. People would have still seen those. But yeah, I so of course, I mean, anytime, you know, it's the old saying of voting with your wallet, right? Like, you're voting with your eyeballs here. If you press play on Disney Plus, they get their number goes up by one and they say, yes, we got another one, right? Apparently we're doing something right. So the only way you can tell a company like this that you want them to do better is by not engaging with the crap that they're putting out. I'm not saying it's all crap. Obviously, I'm here talking about Ahsoka. But yeah, I mean, as a fan, you definitely have a responsibility. And I know how hard it is to engage, I guess, responsibly with that responsibility, because a lot of times you just like, you want more of the thing, you're hoping it'll get better, you've been such a fan for such a long time, you really just want to see it done right, and so you keep hanging on. Mm-hmm. And that's how they get you, you know. So that's what they're counting on, is that they can produce something cheap enough and fast enough that, you know, it'll be worth the next dose of it, I guess.
Here's the thing, like, I love the Fast and Furious franchise, and I don't want it to do better. I was reading some reviews when it first came out, talking about Fast 10 being the worst Fast and Furious since, like, I don't know, whatever. And I'm like, what does that even mean?
It was amazing.
What does it even mean to have a bad Fast and Furious film would probably look like a shitty Jason Bourne. It'd be too serious. It would not have ground. So it's like, what I understand is if they tried to do like a super serious Fast and Furious and like, I don't know why would I support that if I didn't want to see it? You know, it's like, well, it's Fast and Furious. Like, so I'm a Fast and Furious fan, so I guess I watch it. That's what I don't get. The idea of like, well, you know, it might not be the best thing, but it's still this thing. And I like it. It's like, well, then you do like that thing, and you do want them to make more of it. You'd rather them make more of that than stop making it. I'm on the other side of that, where it's like, I wish they would stop making it if they're going to not make it any better than what they've been making it. So,
I never loved Star Wars more than when they weren't making Star Wars. Right?
This
like
is
the
not
mid-90s. I loved it, and there was nothing Star Wars coming out as far as visual media goes.
Because it was rare. But I get it. It's like, I'm not trying to make you feel bad for enjoying it, but it's like, obviously if the majority of Star Wars fans are like you, then like, I'm not going to fit into that.
That's fine. You know, I don't have to be a modern Star Wars fan my entire life.
Yeah.
I haven't been for a long time. I'm starting to get back there, but
yeah, but that's the thing. It's like, give it to others. It's like, I don't know. It's like, this is like the Walking Dead fandom all over again, where we had this kind of arc where, like, in the middle of it, people like, oh, there's just haters, just that. It's like, no, show used to be good, used to be better. It never completely lived up to this potential, but, you know, people are spending hundreds of millions of dollars on this. Shouldn't it be good? And to the extent that there's a large fan base that says, nah, we're actually fine with anything as long as it's got zombies in it and, you know, a zombie gets killed every week, we're going to be happy with it, then you are standing in the way of me getting what I want, which is a better show. So we are a little bit at enemies here, but like, it's not, I don't take this personal.
Gotcha.
It's weird. I get this animated about this because I'm actually really respectful about discussing like religion and politics and things like that with people in real life. But for Star Wars, I feel like, nah, fuck it, just uncork. Who cares? Like, oh, this like at the end of the day, if they ruin Star Wars, it's not going to change the amount of children starving and dying every day, better or worse. So it's like, you know, whatever. But
yeah, I. This is probably going to push this to a 2-hour podcast, but I
well, it's the last feedback, so like we're done.
Okay, perfect. I've got this general feeling like there is an oversaturation of marketing and merchandising and fandom in general. Like we are quickly approaching a breaking point for people's ability to be fans of things. Because it's so in our face and like forced down our throats at every turn. Like you can't go on YouTube without seeing the latest 16 reviews of the episode of Marvel show or Star Wars show or any show, honestly, that's out there. And everywhere you turn, there's advertising for new stuff that you can spend your time and money on. It feels to me like we're approaching something where people are just going to throw their hands up and say, I can't do this anymore.
Well, we're completely in uncharted territories, because if you go back to our fathers, the idea that they would be sitting on a podcast and be like, you know, in 2023, Howdy Doody just doesn't mean the same thing as it used to. Like, I keep on wanting to get those Lone Ranger feels when he's going, but it's just always fucking Lone Ranger and Tonto. The idea that you would like something as a child that you would continue to enjoy throughout your entire life is practically unheard of on this planet Earth.
It's new. Yeah.
Like maybe sports fandom is the one area where people have allowed to be children their entire lives and enjoy it. And nobody bats an eye if you dress up and you wear the clothes. But even that's a lot like... I'm always amazed if you go back and watch like a football game or a basketball game in the 80s, no one's fucking wearing jerseys. No one's wearing enormous parkas with the theme. It's like they're just dressed like they're just out of game, you know? Like all this stuff, this extreme fanaticism in every level is a completely... and I think that we just don't know.
and goaded at every turn. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, at what point did they go from like extracting the natural affection from fans? And that, when did they start fracking it? When they start injecting?
We're there. We're here.
Injecting fluid at high pressure into our veins and like forcing it out of us. And I think we all feel a little bit of that, like that we're being forced to enjoy some things that we'd much rather just kind of like enjoy.
I can't tell if it's a symptom of being a podcaster.
That doesn't help.
This is a general feeling, but that certainly doesn't help. Each week I have to get on and have an opinion on something that doesn't fucking matter to my life, right? Like,
yeah,
Ahsoka could shit the bed tomorrow, be the worst show anyone's ever seen, and it wouldn't make a difference to my life, except that I'm a podcaster and I have to talk about it.
There's 2 hours of podcast to fill. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if that is a general feeling or if that's just me, but I look around and I see the level that all this is at. I look at San Diego Comic-Con. I look at the number of Comic-Cons and the number of conventions and the amount of fandom that is out there. And I wonder, is this just a natural expression of people's excitement for the things they love? Or is this being, like you said, fracked out of us? Is this something that we are pushed to because of the frenetic pace of all of this stuff? And will it just eventually implode?
And there's not a right or wrong answer, and where everyone's at different places. Like, I imagine it has a lot to do with your age, your enthusiasm, what else you got going on in your life. But like, I feel it. I feel pretty fracked, you know, like it feels good I feel like we've been on kind of a high of shows like this that have been really fun to cover. But like, yeah, it feels so good to like feel that genuine spark of like, oh my God, I'm seeing something new. And it's so much fun, and I just don't know what's going on, and you know,
we're being milked and fracked, Aaron.
Forced milking, forced fracking. it's the hottest category in Pornhub now. And I don't know.
I could take the milking on one end, but the fracking on the other is too much.
Yeah. Get milked on one end and fracked on the other. All right. Well, at that note, we are done fracking and milking you, gentle listener. StarWars@baldmove.com is how you send in your thoughts on the state of modern Star Wars. How many seasons of the 93 combined Rebel and Clone Wars we should watch, and which arcs are the most crucial for us to ignore. Anything else, StarWars@baldmove.com. You can also follow us on, because we do other things besides Star Wars, believe it or not. Best way to find out about that is on all our social medias, at Bald Move everywhere except for TikTok. It's at Baldest Move. Finally, I really want to play on this yard. I want to get extra access to the playground equipment, etc. Support.baldmove.com is how you get that. Ad-free feeds, extra audio and video content. Plus, you help us keep doing the thing that presumably you love us to do. So support.baldmove.com. That's it for us on Ahsoka, Tribe of Two here. Until next week, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See you then.